I was like, man, I should have did this. You always do that, right?
Right.
You're always like the king of the situation after you mess up. You know exactly what to do. Okay.
Yeah. So do people on the internet. They always know exactly what to do. Welcome to the Hunt Backcountry podcast, presented by Exo Mountain Gear. This podcast and the gear that we produce at Exo Mountain Gear share the same purpose: to make you a more capable, confident, and successful backcountry hunter. This show is all about providing you with valuable information from experienced hunters. To learn more about the podcast or about our backcountry hunting packs, visit exomountaingear.com. Welcome to episode 149. Winston Churchill is quoted as saying the following: success is not final. Failure is not fatal. It is the courage to continue that counts. And that quote applies to this episode and what we talk about today with Josh Kirchner from Dialed In Hunter. Josh waited 5 years to draw an elk tag in his home state of Arizona. He had 15 plus days to hunt, but things didn't go the way that he planned, the way that he envisioned, the way that he had hoped. He dealt with setbacks and frustration and ultimately failure. But as the quote says, failure is not the end. Failure is not fatal. So how does Josh, how do we bounce back from tough hunts? We discuss that and much more in this episode. Before we dive into it, wanted to thank Oregon JJ for the iTunes review. Please send us your shipping information. We will send you some Exo Mountain Gear and Hunt Backcountry podcast swag. Listeners, again, say it every time. We love to hear your feedback. If you could leave us a review, that helps us tremendously. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions for us directly, please shoot us an email to podcast@exomountaingear.com. Okay, let's dive into this episode with Josh. Josh, welcome back to the Hunt Backcountry podcast. How's it going, man?
Pretty good, man. Thanks for having me back on.
You're like a third time guest or something at this point?
Yeah, I guess. I kind of starting to lose track. I like talking to you guys.
Yeah, man. Glad to have you on. How's it going, Steve?
I'm good, man. Excited to talk to Josh here, and it's always never a bad morning to talk elk hunting.
Especially with guys. I'm sitting here with coffee and stuff, too. So
heck,
that's
yeah,
like,
man.
Super cool.
The essentials.
I'm not gonna lie, I had an early cup this morning, and normally I don't double up, but I saw this thing popping up in the calendar and I was like, I'm gonna need another cup to get through this podcast.
Yes.
It's early. So as listeners may or may not know, you've been on the podcast before. You have the website Dialed In Hunter and social and all that. You're down in Arizona, and what we wanted to talk about today was you being able to elk hunt in Arizona. I feel like saying finally, because you've elk hunted in other states, and even as an Arizona resident, those tags aren't necessarily easy to come by. So just to get the ball rolling with that, what was the wait for you like? What was the tag acquisition process? Had you been putting in for a while? How does that work for you as a resident there in Arizona?
Yeah, so I mean, some guys might laugh at me and be like, oh, you didn't wait that long, but because there's guys, they're waiting, they'll wait 20 years, you know, to go to some of these high quality units. But I waited 5 years total, which to me was an eternity, because that's like when I really, really jumped into hunting. Was like, so the whole time I've been like hunting a lot, I've never got to hunt elk in my home state, but I've hung out with so many elk here and I've just never gotten to hunt them. You know, so it's always been kind of like I compared it to having a Ferrari in the driveway, but no one's giving me the keys.
Yeah.
So I waited 5 years. I got drawn in an area that I essentially learned how to hunt there. Super special spot to me, like a lot of firsts in there, like saw my first elk bugle in that area, killed my first bear there, you know, just a lot of cool memories out of there. So, and it's not like, it's not a top tier unit. It's definitely mid tier, but to me it was top because it, I had so much history with it. So yeah, I got drawn and, finally got to throw my name in the hat for trying to get an elk there.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be great because I know you deer hunt in that area, you bear hunt in the area, as you mentioned. So spending mm-hmm. that much time in the field over 5 years and seeing the elk and hearing the elk, and I'm sure you were just chomping at the bit to actually have an opportunity to be in there with that tag.
Oh, yeah. I've been running cameras in there for years. So I had like, I definitely felt like, you know, like a Midwest whitetail hunter kind of, like I had like bulls named and stuff. And
like, there's Big Stinky.
Yeah, dude, just like so many, you know, I'd get these bulls on camera every year and I'm like, oh man, there's Corky, you know, like,
so. That's funny, dude. So going into the year, did you do much more like over the summer in terms of preseason scouting, or did you feel like, you know, with years under your belt in the area, you kind of had an idea of where to start, what to look for and things like that?
So I definitely had the upper hand, if you want to call it that, because I've been there so many times. But I definitely went out and tried to, like, I was looking at elk a little bit different, you know what I mean? Like all through the summer I'm usually scouting for bears. And I would see like bachelor groups of bulls and cows and everything. And I'd be like, oh, they're darn it. You know, like kind of like there's an elk over there. And I'm just keep looking for bears. But this year I was like, oh, there's an elk, you know, like, I just kind of saw them a little bit different because I actually had a tag. So, yeah, I spent a lot of time branching out a little bit, you know, because like I have my little core area that I like to hang out in. But I'm like, heck, I have a tag, you know, why not explore a little bit more and try and come up with, you know, plan A, B, C, D, and E. So that's what I did. Ran cameras in there all through the summer and into the season. I actually still have cameras out there into the season. Spent a lot of time glassing and stuff, man.
Yeah, just that's cool.
Trying to get a look at bulls and everything, and yeah, it was cool. It was cool looking at it. I felt like I was looking at the spot through different eyes because I finally was able to hunt it. Like,
yeah, with being a, you know, a tag you've waited years for, and kind of being able to know the area and somewhat know the animals. Did you have certain like expectations or a certain class of bull that you're after? How did you go, at least in the beginning of the hunt, like in terms of expectations or what you you know, kind of had your sights set on in terms of any sort of trophy quality, or was that not it for you?
I'm not gonna lie, man, I kind of went into it cocky, dude, like I had been there so long, you know, and spent so much time with these elk. I was worried, and you know the end story of this, but like I was worried that the hunt was going to be too short.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like every nook and cranny, like I, you know the spot real well and everything. But as far as like trophy quality goes, yeah, I was basically like, I didn't want to put a number on it or anything like that, but you know, I had like a full 10 days to hunt in an area that I knew intimately. So I was shooting for like a decent, just like a decent 6 point, you know, I would be really stoked with that. Or like, and I knew in the back of my head though, if something cool happened and it was like a 5 point or something, or, you know, or even a raghorn that came in just like yelling at me and it was a cool experience, I was probably going to shoot that bull.
Yeah.
But in the beginning, yeah, I was definitely like, man, I would really like to get like a nice bull, you know. It would have meant a lot, you know, in that area. So,
right. So but I'm just curious before we jump into the hunt story, because you've hunted Colorado a couple times as well for elk, and I've hunted Colorado, and you know, a lot of what I probably our listeners have experience with states like Colorado, Idaho, Wyoming, etc., is different than Arizona. So What is your overall thoughts right now on just like, what are some of the high level differences that you've seen hunting states like Colorado and then hunting Arizona for elk? Is it the terrain? Is it behavior? Is it like, what comes to mind for you in terms of contrasting those two?
So for me, it was the terrain between Colorado and Arizona is very different. Colorado is very up and down, a lot of elevation gain and loss, steep. And then their elevation, you know, so like actually traversing through the terrain, you're just getting your lungs are getting their butt kicked. Out here, you know, as far as like hunting goes, Arizona is insane. Like the best day in Colorado was like the worst day here.
In terms of just like encounters?
Yeah. Like in terms of like bugling and just an encounter and like elk being receptive to calling, you know, like in Colorado, like I was talking to a guy. And I know this is very situational and stuff, you know, you got to kind of hit the, get a bull in the right mood and everything like that. But I was talking to a guy over in Colorado that was he was an outfitter, and he was telling me he was up on a hill, like watching these guys call elk, but the elk run away, like when they started calling. So like here, man, like the first day, I cow called three times and a bull ran up to me. Just like completely different, just a completely different experience. You know what I mean? And then like elk bugling in Colorado when I was there. I usually hunt the first week in September, so it's not like crazy in the heart of the rut or anything. But elk were just bugling just on their own. And a lot of times I didn't even have to make any sound, you know, there's one over there, let's go that way. And then there's another one over there, let's go over there if we mess this up. And you know, so, that was really cool. Super yeah. cool.
That's awesome.
What time of year were you hunting down there?
I believe, yeah, the opener was September 14th. So yeah. So there you go. Like a little bit later than I would have been in Colorado. I usually leave, like when I would hunt Colorado, I would usually head home like the 10th or so. So, yeah, a little bit later in Arizona.
So you just mentioned there, like, did you say that was the first day you had a bull come running in? Like, get us into the hunt actually starting. Did you go up there a couple days beforehand and like do some last minute scouting and locating?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I went up, actually mainly I just wanted to get my camping spot. That like, this was not, I wasn't like backpacking in or anything like that. I had my dad coming up with me and stuff, and he was going to be part of it. And so that was really cool. But, yeah, I went up a couple days beforehand and basically just did a lot of glassing, and we were seeing bulls every morning and evening, just getting super stoked. So yeah, that was exciting.
Yeah. So day one, was it like wake up and you're going, which way do I go? Cause I know I got a bull here, I got a bull there. Like, how did that hunt start?
Yeah. Different story on day one. So I woke up and I didn't hear anything actually. The day before that, when I was scouting, I was just curious. I blew a bugle into a canyon nearby and five bulls lit up right away. And then the next morning, I didn't hear a peep. I was up at like 3 a.m, kind of had me worried, you know, and lots, just so much anticipation, right? Like behind, you know, this starting up, and I wake up and there's nothing. I'm like, what the heck, you know? So my plan was to go and kind of sneak my way through these bedding areas that I knew the elk would go to after the morning, and made it over into one. And as I'm walking along this game trail, an elk did bugle. It was very lazy though. It was like, just like, I almost thought it was a human. But then I started hearing branches break, and I'm like, oh my goodness, you know, that's like a real elk. So we set up real quick, and I cow called like three times, and then the bulls just started running over to me and came up broadside at 45 yards. But, you know, it was like, it was a little raghorn, you know what I mean? It's like a 3x3. First like 5-10 minutes of the hunt. So I'm like, you know what? I'm going to, I want this to last a little longer.
You know, like, at least till lunchtime.
Yeah, seriously. So like, let that bull walk. Right after that, minutes after that, a bull was bugling behind that raghorn. So he was probably like a mile away from that. So we started running over there. Never could get caught up to that bull. Ran over towards another bull that was bugling. Couldn't get caught up to that bull. The thing that was eye-opening throughout this whole thing as my hunt went on was, you know, like the romanticization of like the elk hunting that we do is like on all these videos you see like the born and raised guys. They're like, it's like a bugle fest, right? They just bugle 200 times a day trying to get a bull to respond. However, in this country, it was fairly open. It was like, it was juniper country and a lot of open, like you could glass, you know what I mean? So calling, I noticed, wasn't like as far as like locating went, it was hard, man. Because like knowing like where the elk were and stuff, like when they would bugle, they're always further away than I always think they were, and I never could catch up to them. And I could never find out if that was because the terrain was more open and they could see me possibly like coming towards them, you know, because you like, you talk about like when you're calling out, like, have you heard of like the doorway principle?
Mm-hmm. But yeah, explain it for listeners. Yeah.
Okay. So like if you go and you get, let's say you get set up on the edge of a meadow and there's a bull bugling across that meadow. Well, if you set up on the opposite side of that meadow, chances are what's going to happen is the bull is probably going to come to the edge of the other side of the meadow and look. And if he doesn't see what he's going after, now there's probably exceptions to this, right? Like some rut crazed bull would run across the meadow, but in general, like they're going to be looking across the meadow. If they don't see that cow or bull or whatever, they're probably not going to come out. And it's called the doorway principle because, like if you're in your house and, you know, say like you go, you're like, you know, you call your wife or something like that. You're like, honey. And then she answers you. And then you're like, oh, she's in the bedroom. And you go to the bedroom and you like kind of lean in and look and you don't see her. Why would you go into the bedroom? So you just stand in the doorway. So that's why it's kind of called the doorway principle. So, so that was difficult, man. A lot of open terrain and stuff. I couldn't figure out, like I said, if they were seeing me or what, or if I was just too slow. Maybe that was it. Mm. So after that, the morning chasing around bugles, which was awesome, we waited for the wind to change and got down into another bedding area that I knew about. And right when I got down in there, I could see across the canyon and I just saw this monster bull. He was all wet, trailing a cow. And the cow looked like she was like annoyed. like she was trying to run away from him. And we lost that bull in a thicket of junipers. And I sat on that bull all day waiting for him to come back out. And at 5:30, so that was at 9 in the morning when I saw that bull. And I didn't want to go make like a blind stalk. I kind of had the idea of where he was, but I didn't want to. It was really thick juniper. I mean, you can't see 20 yards in there. So I didn't want to go like just blow him out right away. So I waited all day and he popped back up at 5:30. So then I went over there and I got in. I started getting into the area where I thought he was. And I started cow calling and I'm just hearing like footsteps all around me. But I can't see anything. Like I could hear, like there was one bull straight ahead of me that was raking a tree that I couldn't see. There was another bull to my right that was raking a tree. There was three bulls up to my right that sounded like they were a couple hundred yards away up on a flat that were bugling. And then there was another elk, which I later found out was a big bull, down to my left that was actually following me as I was cow calling. So, like,
that's insane.
Dude, I'm telling you, like, I'm walking through, like I said, you can't see 20 yards, man. And, like, so what ended up happening was with the bull that was raking to my right, he ended up coming right at me, okay? And he, but stopped at 45 yards broadside, could no shot, just completely covered up by branches. I had no, there was not a will, there was not a will to shoot that bull. He ended up winding me. So he ran off. I kept going forward to go after the bull that was right in front of me. That bull just completely disappeared. I don't know where he went. I'm thinking that was the bigger bull, the big bull that I saw in the morning. Just because he just kind of slipped away, and that's just kind of how I like to think about it.
Gives me peace.
Yeah, it gives me peace. Yeah. It's like, oh, he's sly, and he set everything right again by sneaking away from me. So, but then, so I kept hearing footsteps down to my left, and I kept calling, and I never could get a look at the bull. So I went up. I'm like, well, let me go up on the flat where that bull winded me and those other bulls were bugling. So I get up there, and then of course the elk that was behind me comes walking up, and now the wind is blowing right towards him when he gets in crest the horizon, and then he just blows out. So mm-hmm. So that was my first day. And when I got back to camp, my dad and brother, they were across the way looking at the hillside as I was over there, and they were telling me, dude, you had like a massive 5 point 20 yards away from you. That was the elk that was following me.
Wow. But so they actually saw that go down.
Yeah. They could see everything. That was everything that was happening. And, I never even saw fur on that elk. And that's how close he was. And he was just following me the whole way, 'cause I was cow calling.
Wow.
So yeah, pretty cool first day.
Yeah.
And went back to camp and was like, man, what? I got 9 more days of this. Well, how was it?
Like, right.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. That brings so many questions to mind with like that many elk in that area, and then specifically like that many bulls in shouting distance of one another. Like, I wonder how that changes calling strategies and things like that.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a common scenario where you're like, oh, I have like 6 elk within X hundred yards or 6 bulls within X hundred yards. Mm-hmm. How should I, like, does the herd bull at that point even care? Is he being defensive? Because clearly he's letting them hang around to some extent. I just wonder, you know, and maybe nobody knows the answer to that, or maybe somebody does have experience, but it just brings a lot of questions to mind.
Yeah, dude, me too, man. That's what was going through my head. I was like, man, how should I play this? What I did notice was I was not seeing a lot of cows at all. Okay. Like, the only cow that I saw was the one that big bull was trailing.
Hmm.
To me, I'm like, okay, maybe the rut isn't like going full force yet.
Right.
But they are very susceptible to cow calls.
Yeah.
Because they're not herded up yet. So that's kind of the route that I went.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I've run into that one time in Colorado, and we actually ended up bringing a bull out of it. But we had basically 3 bulls like up on this big saddle. As far as we could tell, there was no cows up there. They were all 3 within, you know, 600 yards or something. Mm-hmm. And definitely getting in the midst of them and playing some cow calls made him go crazy for sure. But I think, again, that goes all back to timing, right?
Yeah. And that was, you know, I don't mean to jump ahead, but as the hunt progressed, I definitely noticed like a difference in like what the bulls were bugling to, like it, as far as what I was doing, like it was different, you know. They were not as receptive to cow calls as they were in the beginning. And they were also, I noticed they started getting shy, you know. I remember one instance where I cow called and the bull sounded like he was within 100 yards of me, and I called, and the next thing I saw the bull walking away from me and he was 300 yards away. So yeah, I mean, like, that was interesting being there for that amount of time, being in elk like every single day and noticing the progression of not just, you know, my failures, but like the animal behavior. Because in the beginning, like I said, I wasn't seeing any cows, but then towards the end, oh, you bet there was cows, you know, there was a lot of them.
And you're talking over the course of what, like 10 days?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I hunted, I was there for 14 days straight. And hunted for 10 of those days. That's like, I went up like a couple days early. And then I came back and hunted 2 more days, just like evenings, just because I was like, I have an elk tag. Like, what am I doing? You know what I mean?
I mean, that's a great point. Not many people have the opportunity to stay in one area for that long, especially at that time of year, and then see how things change, right? It also goes to show you why, like, say you're doing an out-of-state hunt. Say you hunt the first 5 days or the second 5 days.
Mm-hmm.
You're only a few days apart, but you could have vastly different experiences, maybe have to use vastly different techniques. And so it's all about adapting. It's all about, I guess, like, reading what's happening and then adapting to it.
Oh, yeah. And that was to jump ahead a little bit, like the second day we went up into an area that I did want to backpack into, but it was completely different terrain. Like, I was hunting in these junipers and these big canyons and stuff like that. So I went up into this, it was really hot. It was like 91 degrees. So I figured if I got up into this big timbered bench high up, that's where the bulls would be, because it'd be a lot of shade and it'd be cooler. We went up in there and played with a bull for like 30 minutes or so and couldn't get him to come in. And then when I tried to get closer, he was already gone. But then the next morning I woke up at, I heard bugles at 1:30 in the morning. And then I could not go back to sleep at 2:00. So I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to get up. And I just went and stood off in the darkness and just listened to where all these bulls were. I heard like 100 bugles that morning. It was just like, you know, taking note of their locations and stuff like that. Whereas the two days before that, they I didn't hear a peep on their own. Like, they didn't bugle at all. So, like, in reference to what you were saying, like, scenes can change, like, in a day. Like, very quickly, as far as, like, animal behavior goes. So.
Yeah, man, that's both frustrating and encouraging. I mean, it's encouraging because, say, you go out and you have 3 days of super bad hunting, maybe at the start of your trip. That might all change literally overnight, you know?
Oh, yeah, for sure. That was the grind of the whole thing, you know? Like, you've done 10-day hunts and stuff like that, and like anyone that's done that and stayed out there, like, you're gonna have like a really good day, and then you might have like 3 days that are like kind of blah, and then you get recharged on the fifth day. You know what I mean? Because that'll be another good day. But if you get discouraged and you go home, man, you're not gonna experience that good day, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's how it was. It was like, I was into elk like every day I was there, but there were definitely days that were slower than others. You know what I mean? And especially after like missing, and that was rough.
Yeah. So get into that. You know, not only is it sometimes tough to stay in it on a long hunt when the elk aren't cooperating, but then you have experiences where you blow something, whether that's, you know, you blow an opportunity, you miss one, whatever. Part of that played into this hunt for you. So how did that go down? How did you try to bounce back from that? How did you stay in it? Because that's definitely a big part of this hunt.
Yeah. So that morning that I woke up super early, we head off in the dark, and we're walking down this abandoned two track with our headlamps off, just kind of creeping along in the darkness. And I ripped a bugle off, and I got like three bulls bugled around me. So I was like, okay, well, let's do this. You know, we come up with a game plan with the wind and everything like that. So as we're going, I get over to the area that I called that raghorn in the first day. And I'm like, I was just curious, you know, I was like, yeah, dude, let me blow a cow call in here. I'm just curious. So I cow called, and then boom, freaking bull, like two or three bulls bugled in this little basin thing. So I was like, well, heck, the wind's perfect for those and they're closer, you know, let's go in there. So went in there and got set up waiting for the sun, waiting for light to come up, you know, and I started cow calling. And after probably 5 minutes, I had two bulls to my right screaming at me, one bull behind me, and one bull down below me to my left coming towards me. And I just kept cow calling, and the bull bugled to my right. And I'm not like big on the language of elk. Okay. Like, I don't like pay a whole lot of attention to that. Like, why is that elk saying that? And what is the elk trying to say? But like right after that bull bugled, I did this like whiny cow call, like, meow, meow. And right after that, like, I saw feet coming down the hill, and it was a 5-point and a spike that were coming in together. And I ranged this bush at, it was 55 yards. And I'm like, okay, the elk walk kept coming towards me. Is frontal. All right. And I was like, man, like, I'm not against frontal shots or anything like that, but at 50 yards, I was kind of hesitant of it. He gets to a point, the doorway. Okay. There was this little opening between us, and he stopped at the edge of that doorway. Right. And he doesn't see a cow. So then he turns broadside, and I guessed him at 45 yards because of that bush I ranged. So I'm at full draw, and I can see a branch on the top pin. Okay. I know that that's bad. Okay. But like, for some reason, I'm like, no, it's fine to myself. You know?
But there's also an elk on my bottom pin.
Yeah. But there's an elk, there's a bull. Yeah. So I'm like, yeah, I shot. Of course, the arrow hit the branch, deflected, elk ran away unscathed, and I had a clean broken arrow after that. So that was the first miss of the trip.
And you say first like there's others.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, no, there is. Yeah. So we chased bugles all morning. That was an insane morning. I had a freaking, just an absolute giant at 70 yards. No shot though, because I was in that super thick timber, but I could see, or juniper, but I could see his feet. I could see his feet below the juniper, and I could see his antlers above the juniper. It was just like this absolute giant bull, and he just winded us, you know. And we never got another shot opportunity, but we were into him all day that, or all morning that day. And then the rest of the trip up until I actually did shoot a bull was pretty, like, it was pretty much the same stuff every day. You know, like, we would get into him and couldn't make anything happen. We'd get into him, couldn't make anything happen, you know, just kind of over. But it was encouraging, you know what I mean? For as slow as it might have sounded to us while we were out there, we're like, okay, you know, and sometimes the bulls, they would stop bugling at 6:30 in the morning. So it's like, man, what are we going to do now? You know, like, it's going to be a long wait. Let's go hang out in betting areas or whatever. But my dad ended up leaving because he was burnt out. He's an older guy, but he's spry. But he was like, man, you guys kicked my butt. You know, we were hiking a lot and stuff. So he got out of there. So after that, it was just me and my brother Jake. And I think we were on day 7 or day 8 at that point, and up hunting. And we noticed, like, through the days that the elk were starting to, it seemed like they were being less responsive to what I was doing, like the calling and stuff. So I was like, you know what? Let's just go and glass and let's just do spot and stalk, you know? So we're like, cool, let's do that. So we go over to this little glassing knob that I know about, and we're sitting there, and an hour before dark, I look down. I'm like, there's a bull right there. We also got to the point where I was like, all bulls are in trouble. because the bull that I missed, that was he was a nice 5-point, but after that, yeah, I would see like some big bulls and stuff like that, but like never could make anything happen. Like one instance I had, like, I mean, I'm not a numbers guy, okay, but this bull's like 350 and he's coming up the hill to me, and I could hear the branches breaking as he was coming up towards my calling. And it was to the point, it was sounded so close where it was like, okay, I need to draw, you know, mm-hmm. But I never saw him. There was a whole lot of that happened throughout the week.
Yeah.
Really exciting and kind of like haunting in a way. Cause like, I knew this like big bulls were in front of me, but I couldn't see anything. So anyways, we go over and I glass this bull up, and I'm like, I see he has an antler. I didn't even count the points on him. I was like, but I'm going, stay here. So I ran down the hill, and I knew there was this little spring down the bottom of this canyon. I knew he was probably going over there because it was super hot. So I went around and ambushed him at this spring, and he jumped up. I got down there and he jumped up and was 65 yards from me. The problem, the issue that I made here, okay, the mistake was I saw where he was going to come out, okay? I ranged a rock right there, and I got 68 yards. So I'm like, okay. So in my head, like real quick thinking, I'm like 70 yards. I'm going to aim for 70. What I didn't take into account was the bull is in front of that. Okay, so I go and I shoot, and I hit the bull high. This will make a lot more sense after I get through the story. But I hit the bull high to the point where I was like, I need to get another arrow in that bull. I never could, though. He ran up and ran into this super thick manzanita stuff, and at that point I was like, man, I don't want to like – I don't want to possibly like bump them.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So I found blood, followed blood for like 60, 70 yards. And I was like, you know what? I don't like it. It was just about to get dark. I don't want to risk anything. So I backed out, and the nights were cool and stuff, you know? So I backed out, came in the next morning, and, tracked that bull for a mile. For my calculations and it got to the point where it was like blood, nothing for like 60 yards, blood. So in the beginning it was pretty good. And then it got to that point. And then at that point we were just following tracks. And then after that, we were just kind of gritting the areas. Oh, where do you think a bull would go lay down? Basically. And I never could turn that bull up. So I was pretty down after that, and went back to camp, kind of hung out and regrouped. Went back out that night, and there was like, I got four bulls that came into this water tank at last light. So I ran down in there and took some shots that I shouldn't have taken. if I'm being honest. They're shots that I know that I know that I'm confident in making them, but how the situation was, the elk, they didn't know, have no idea I was there. There was no reason that I had to shoot that far away. I could have totally got closer, but just where my state was mentally, I was seeing these elk and I'm kind of seeing my house. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I was super, I was kind of homesick, man. You know, that was the longest hunt I've ever done, 14, you know, days straight out there, missing my wife and stuff. And, kind of got desperate, you know, and I did not hit any of those bulls after 5 arrows.
Jeez.
Yeah.
How did
crazy.
I mean, so, I remember you had posted some stuff and actually went back to look at it. And, I mean, you were definitely down at that point and justifiably so, right? You know, it's funny what even apart from things happening the way they did, and even apart from that bull and that shot and tracking him and not getting him, as you said, when you get super deep into a long hunt, it's like anything can kind of set you off or put you down. And I think it's really interesting, really honest how you look at it now and can kind of see you just weren't in a good headspace.
No, I wasn't. I wasn't in a good headspace at all. And it caused me to make bad decisions. On top of that, though, I was curious the next morning. I'm like, man, how did I miss? You know what I mean? Like, elk's a big critter, you know?
And you shoot, if listeners don't know, and some listeners might be like, well, you shouldn't have shot at 70 yards. And I'm not saying whether you should or shouldn't have, and it's all personal, but you shoot a crap ton, year round, all the time.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, yeah, so no, don't, it's I, not I, like you're like, yeah, season opens in a couple weeks. Let me dust off my bow, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, no, yeah, I'm no Tim Gillingham or anything like that by any stretch, okay? But, I shoot a lot and stuff, and I felt really good on that shot I took on the bull where I hit him high. That shot felt really good, and that was what kind of baffled me. So I went, I was like, you know what, let me check my sight, you know? And I was somewhere throughout the trip, this happened. I was 8 inches high across the whole board. I shot from 30 to out to 80 in camp, and I was that high. You know, I was like, man, dude. So that paired with, I don't want to make any excuses at all. Please don't anyone think I'm doing that. Okay. But that's a lot paired with nerves and desperation. Right. So I got that all figured out, and you know, that's the second time that's happened to me, man. And that happened to me on a bear last year. I bumped my sight. I had my bow attached to my backpack, and I was climbing down these bluffs and stuff to get to make this big loop around to get on this bear. And I hit my bow on these boulders coming down, you know, and I didn't think anything of it. And, shot over the bear twice, you know, went back to camp. Same thing. I was high. So I don't know. So with that being said, I started, each day after that I hunted, I checked my bow when I was in camp. I know you can't always do that, if you're doing a backcountry hunt, but if you got a truck camp set up, why not? You know, why not check your bow, especially after there was a few times where I was where I bumped my sight and I was it's probably fine. Right. There's gotta be a lot to bump a sight. You know what I mean? But a little bit goes a long way. So
yeah, I would say, just as a frame of reference, and I haven't been perfect at this, but if you are on a backpack hunt, something I've fallen back on before is just having reference marks for everything.
Yep.
So you can see if something's moved. You know, so once your bow's dialed, you go into preseason, your sight, your rest, pretty much every adjustment you can think of, every place where something can shift or move. I just try to create reference points there, and then I can see, oh, well, these lines aren't matching up anymore. Something moved. Again, I've never been perfect at that, but.
Yeah, I definitely got the Sharpie out after that experience.
Yeah.
another good one, just pack a judo point and then just, you know, I'll do that every other day or something, shoot a rotten out stump at 50 yards. And that's a good way just to make sure things are staying in line.
Yeah. My brother always packs a judo point and I never do, but that was eye opening to me. And I was like, maybe I should start doing that, you know, packing a judo point, just, you know, especially, I mean, a truck camp's one thing, but if you're on a backpack hunt, you can't necessarily attach a block target to your backpack. So,
man, so how did you move forward after that? Like, I know in one of the posts you had, you said failure is an opportunity to learn and do better next time.
Yeah.
In this moment, talking about failure, you were growing as a hunter, no matter how down you are.
Yep.
Like, that's easy to say afterwards, but I know from personal experience, it's really, really tough to have that mindset in the midst of and immediately following, you know, events like that.
Yeah. Yeah, that was super hard. Keep the head screwed on straight, man. I kept telling myself, like, the easy thing to do was to give up. That was like, it would be to go home, you know, but I knew if I did that, A, my wife was going to smack me in the head and B, I was going to be super mad at myself, you know, cause I think a lot of times you get wrapped up in the moment that's in front of you and you forget about everything before that. And what I mean by that is, like, you look back on the past and you're like, yeah, I know how to do this. You know, I know how to go out there. I know how to hunt. I know how to have a good time and stay with it and fill a tag here and there. Yeah, and it's hard to remember that when you're like so beaten down. But you have to. I mean, that's all. And what I would, you know, another thing that's really easy to say is, you know, when you go to bed and you wake up in the morning, it's a new day. It's a new day. It's a new opportunity. You know, whether you're going to, it's an opportunity to mess up or an opportunity to not mess up. That's, the day is going to tell you that as it goes on. But, and even when you do mess up, like, dude, every time I screwed up, you know, whether it was from a calling sequence or stalking or something like that, I was like, man, I should have did this. You always do that, right?
Right.
You're always like the king of the situation after you mess up. You know exactly what to do. Okay.
Yeah. So do people on the internet. They always know exactly what to do.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah. They're always right. So, yeah, it was difficult, man. But just, I knew I would regret if I gave up, so... Not, mama didn't raise a quitter, so. You know? So, yeah. I knew, dude, if I gave up and went home, I would way rather be out here like struggling elk hunting. That sounds stupid, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, let me go, you know, you're complaining about being out elk hunting.
So hard.
And, yeah. And by the way, I drew an Arizona tag.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, life was pretty good,
right?
You know, when you look back on it. So,
yeah, that's interesting. I mean, coming out of this, and again, this is one of those like super cliche things, but I think this story, this hunt, what you've experienced really illustrates how true it can be, is
yeah.
that you truly do grow in failure. It's like, you know, for sure. I mean, you've said it very clearly. I took shots I shouldn't have taken. You know that now. And that's going to change how you evaluate opportunities in the future. Just one example. I'm sure there's probably, you know, a handful of others. But do you feel, even though that this hunt didn't end with that filled tag, do you feel like more capable, more confident, even though you didn't have a quote unquote successful hunt now?
Oh, 100%, man. Yeah. Cause like, it, like, a big thing was just dealing with the grind. It's like, okay, now I know, you know, I can do that. You know what I mean? Whereas before, I'd never been out in the field for 14 days, you know? And I know after going through so many, like, what felt at the time like these like rock bottom lows, when they weren't really, right? But I know that it's like, oh, the next day, dude, something crazy, something awesome could happen, you know? So sticking with it was one of the biggest things I took out of it, was like, man, dude, like, yeah, you might be down, but don't let that get to you too much, you know, like on to the next one, you know? So, yeah, definitely.
Cool, man. Lots to pull from it for sure. Are you on another 5-year trajectory, you think, before you can do this in Arizona again?
Dude, I'm hoping I get a little bit of luck on my side and like I draw it next year or something. These guys, I talked to 3 different fellas that found out I had the tag and stuff, and they told me, man, I've drawn that 3 years in a row. I'm like,
really?
Dude, who are you paying at the Game and Fish to give you these tags?
Yeah.
You know, so yeah. Yeah. I mean, technically, yes. Yeah. I mean, that, you know, if you want to like go by like when I can definitely draw the tag, then yeah. But
yeah,
there's always a chance.
So you're saying there's a chance.
Yeah. There's a chance. And until then, I'm just going to stick to my Bears, you know, and hang out with those guys.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. Well, I know you'll, whether it's next year or in a few years, I know you'll get back in there and get redemption.
Heck yeah, man. Heck yeah. So
cool. Well, Josh, man, we appreciate it. Yeah.
Oh,
you
bet.
We appreciate you joining us as always. And where do you want to point listeners to? And let me ask you this, and I might have to edit this out.
Oh, no.
I know you're working on a pretty cool like resource, and it's kind of in early stages, but can you talk about what you're trying to kind of put together in terms of like content wise for backpack hunting stuff?
Oh my goodness. What are you doing to me, Mark?
Hey, I said we could edit it out.
Yeah.
What I'm trying to do is make you accountable so that this thing happens.
This is why I'll talk about it. So I'm held accountable.
There you go.
Okay. So yeah. Yeah. So, I'm currently working on sort of an e-course on backpack hunting, like from front to back, like from you don't even know if you want a backpack hunt all the way to packing an animal out back to your vehicle. Like from that, everything in between, like details on gear items, food, mental state of mind, physical stuff, like just everything you can imagine in backpack hunting. I'm trying to put that all together. So
cool. Nice.
Well, the other reason I mentioned in addition to holding you accountable is I figured if listeners have questions that they're like, hey, are you going to include this? Are you going to cover this? Maybe they can, you know, make some recommendations on your way and make sure that that's covered in there.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. If anyone has anything that they've been wondering about, and that's like the reason I wanted to do it was because when I started this out, this whole backpack hunting thing, all the information is out there, but like it's not condensed, in my opinion. Like there's not like a one-stop shop for like, how do I do this? Like I remember for the longest time, dude, like I would listen to your guys' podcast, and Steve would always talk about the Sawyer squeeze and how he would filter water straight into his bladder. I could not find, now you can, okay, but back then I couldn't find anywhere that actually showed how to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Just like, it's like little things like that, you know, like how to use this filter, how to use this filter, how to use this stove. You know what I mean? Like, how does a quilt work? You know? Yeah. So yeah, I just kind of wanted to like, I wish I would have had something like this when I was starting out backpack hunting and stuff. So
cool. Well, if folks want to reach out or make sure that they see that in the future, whenever that does become available, how can they connect with you, follow along, that type of thing?
Yeah, I'm on all the social platforms. You just search Dialed In Hunter, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and then you can go to my website too and get a hold of me through there, and that's dialedinhunter.com.
Well, that's a wrap on this one, guys. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you've had a tough hunt recently, if you've dealt with some frustration, maybe some failure, you too can bounce back. And even if you found success, as the quote from Churchill says, that's not final. Success on a past hunt doesn't guarantee success on a future hunt, and the same can be said for failure. So all we can do is keep going, enjoy the process, keep working hard. All right, talk to you guys next week.